Maybe just a little bit. I definitely was a little bit of a curmudgeon, I would say, walking into class being like, oh, I've been doing this for 5 years and everyone wants all these different animals and da 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 da. But yeah, I do think it's so good to be around people who are excited. It really helps.
Welcome to the 401st installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. When Francis Kelleher took LSP's Farm Beginnings course during the winter of 2024 and 2025, she was at a critical juncture in her farming career. For around 5 years or so, she had worked on various farms in Minnesota and Wisconsin, building up experience raising sheep for food and fiber. Frances also had used her sweat equity to grow a small flock of ewes. A couple of the established farmers she interacted with over that time were graduates of Farm Beginnings, a training program that focuses on the goal setting, marketing, and financial skills needed to establish a successful farm business. Participants in Farm Beginnings start out the course going through an exercise identifying what values drive them, putting them in a better position to choose the type of farming career that allows them to live those values. Another major part of the course is holistic financial management, which focuses on big picture decision making and goal setting processes. In a holistic management system, a farmer's quality of life is put on the same level as the health of the soil or the operation's economic viability. At first glance, such a class would seem to be a perfect fit for Frances, who's in her late 20s and has long had a passion for animals, ecology, and producing healthy food. In fact, she had learned a lot about the course while taking Farm Dreams, a kind of precursor to Farm Beginnings LSP has offered in the past. But she wasn't so sure if, in fact, Farm Beginnings was something she needed. Her long-term goal was to work on other farms in a cooperative fashion, and Frances didn't really think she'd need to learn how to be an entrepreneur to do that. But a couple things happened that changed her mind. First-hand experience with one type of cooperative farming model didn't go as planned, and she came out of that situation pretty financially strapped. In addition, her grandmother, Elaine, passed away at the age of 100, leaving behind a vacant house, some outbuildings, and 46 acres of a former dairy farm west of Mankato, Minnesota. Frances suddenly realized that she had something many beginning farmers only dream of: access to land and facilities. And once she accepted the fact that she might be running her own farm business, she also realized she would need training in how to manage finances. So, she took the Farm Beginnings class and in April 2025, right before lambing season, moved 17 ewes to the family farm, which is on the bottomlands of the Minnesota River and borders Miniopa State Park. Almost a year to the day after that move, I visited Frances's operation, which she calls Riverbed Lamb, to see how the previous 12 months had gone and talk about what she got out of the Farm Beginnings course. Despite a serious outbreak of fly strike, a condition where parasitic blowflies lay eggs in wool or open wounds, as well as struggles utilizing borrowed equipment to move the sheep, Frances feels good enough about the 2025 season to give it another go in 2026. She's even happy with how her direct-to-eaters lamb marketing venture is going. It turns out there's a good demand for livestock products raised using regenerative methods. That said, Frances knows that the current location of her riverbed lamb enterprise may not be permanent, given that several extended family members own the property, and it's not clear if river bottom land is the best place to raise sheep. So, she's keeping her options open and remaining as mobile as possible, relying on portable electro-netting for fencing and moving the flock to other farms in the region to graze when needed. She admitted to me that she was feeling pretty burnt out and a little cynical when she enrolled in the Farm Beginnings course, but being in the class with other beginning farmers helped Frances get energized about agriculture again. It even gave her permission to, as she puts it, become dreamy again about an agrarian career and to think in the long term. Even so, the young farmer is still experienced enough to know that pursuing a career in livestock production requires practical skills, covering everything from basic husbandry to how to set up paddocks. After all, Farm Beginnings may help someone learn the skills needed to manage a farm holistically, but it doesn't teach specific production techniques. That's why last year, Francis also took part in a Food Animal Concerns Trust mentorship program where Hannah Bernhardt, veteran livestock grazer and Farm Beginnings grad, provided some practical guidance on sheep farming. Francis found that experience so energizing that this year she'll be serving as a mentor herself, this time through a program offered by the Women, Food, and Ag Network. During my visit, Francis showed me a former cow pasture that, before 2025, hadn't seen livestock disturbance for almost 3 decades. When she arrived last year, it was a thick thatch of unpalatable vegetation and was threatened with being taken over by invasive species. On a warm day in mid-April, green forages were emerging, a sign that a year of rotational grazing was having a positive impact. After looking at the revitalized pasture, Francis and I sat down to chat about what she got out of a course she wasn't so sure about at first, how her first year in a semi-permanent location went, and the value of having mentors. She started our conversation sharing how, in a sense, coming to her grandparents' farm represents an intersection of her interest in addressing indigenous rights, ecological destruction, and a toxic landscape that threatens human health. The young farmer concedes that thinking about such heavy issues can be overwhelming. But utilizing a system like regenerative grazing is helping overcome that feeling of hopelessness through a form of food production that weaves a restorative, resilient web. So, Francis, you just gave me a tour of your farm down here, which I'm going to steal this phrase. I really like how you describe it. It's at a dead-end road here on the Minnesota River. You call it kind of the belly of the valley, I think, or the belly of the Minnesota River Valley. So you're really right down on here. So really neat to see. And we're almost exactly a year out from when you brought sheep down to this farm. This hadn't seen livestock in quite some time. It had been a dairy, but it had been, maybe 3 decades since there had been livestock on here. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about was you've already seen some of the positive impacts of getting livestock on here. But one of the things that you talked about, I thought you did a really good job of describing this, is how getting into farming and getting into grazing kind of was a lot of things coming together at once, a little bit. And it had to do a little bit with some health concerns in your family, but also you doing some reading on the history of this area and indigenous people and a lot of issues. I think that's a really good, I think people think when you make a decision, sometimes it's like, well, I'm going to do this because I do this ABC, but a lot of things were coming together at once. And that's maybe what led you at the time. The timing was good to take Farm Beginnings too, but can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah. So studying public health in college. And then as I was nearing the end of college, my capstone was a class about Dakota and settler history in southern Minnesota specifically. In that class, I read Wasiatuan's What Does Justice Look Like? And that was probably the most life-changing, impactful book I've ever read. She talks about land back and responsibility in that book. I mean, lays out why the U.S.-Dakota War was a genocide, the impact of that on Dakota people and on land. And she talks a lot about like institutions' responsibility for land back, state responsibility for land back, but then talks about settler responsibility within that. And one of the things that really stuck with me was settlers' responsibility to heal land and not just give land back and wash your hands and be free of the guilt and the shame and the damage, but how do we actively move towards building relationship with land, healing the damage that we've done? And this place felt like such a huge example of that. Then also understanding like the health impact of this way of farming on my family. Around that time, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was very early stage and was able to be treated, but there were no genetic markers for it. And then another cousin around, I think just a few years earlier, but younger, also had breast cancer, the same type, no genetic markers, which to me, studying public health, learning about the environment, felt really clear that the connection between chemicals used and the style of farming had these big impacts on health. And then thinking about the land being stolen. And I spent a lot of time feeling pretty stuck in that, and like feeling shame and feeling guilt and feeling distraught about the closeness of that and like the lineage of this land and the legacy of this land and wanting it to be different. And then I was learning about rotational grazing and regenerative grazing and finding out about like rebuilding root systems and helping ecosystems heal and come back, and like birds coming back. Mm-hmm. Just felt like there was movement and possibility and hope. And yeah, it's really easy to get like stuck in that settler guilt, I think. And like, I don't think this is perfect. And I also think it's a way to be moving towards something different and trying to do a little bit of repair on this land that my family loves and that I love and that we also have had like a tough impact on.
Yeah. Well, I can vouch for, you took me out to a former, I guess it would have been a dairy pasture that had gotten, you said when you came here a year ago, it was has so much thatch on it. And I think there's some invasives that have kind of come in, maybe some buckthorn, that kind of thing. But you, there was so much thatch, you didn't even know if there was going to be any green that would come up through it. And it's, like I said, it's April 16th today. And boy, there's green coming up through there. And you were saying, I almost wonder if you could turn the sheep out early this year. It looked really good. And that's just within that 1 year of rotational grazing. So it sounds like it's already, and I know it's been a tough year otherwise, but that really is one example of, you were kind of proven right there about the impacts of that grazing and how you can have a positive impact on the land.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely motivating. Like, first year was hard in a lot of ways and great in a lot of ways. First winter felt pretty tough. Mm. The last several weeks have been tough ones, and it's feeling like a win to see that and to get excited about the season and get excited for lambing.
Your interest getting involved in, or your interest in rotational grazing and seeing that as a way to heal the land and maybe, you know, get started in farming, the timing is really good. There is a lot of innovations in rotational grazing right now with the fencing, portable fencing, especially you don't want to invest in too much permanent infrastructure right now. So there's a lot of innovations there, but there's a lot of folks around who are doing, and specifically with sheep. Mm-hmm. So that seems like that's a really, seems like the timing's really good for somebody like you to kind of look into this and get, not just dream about it, but get some practical ideas on how to work through something like this.
Yeah, I think like the network of mentors and graziers is pretty amazing right now. Like, whether it's a dog question, last week had dog issues and was able to text Hannah, then call a vet who I have heard a lot about but had never met out near Winona, talk to other mentors who I've worked with, and just like, yeah, these networks of graziers of like, okay, so we've got the sheep, what are the sheep questions? We've got the grazing, what are the grazing questions? We've got the dogs, what's it like to work with working dogs, which is a totally different framework. How am I talking to the vet differently about these things? And yeah, it's feeling like a good time to like tap into these networks.
And speaking of dogs, people may hear a little whining back here. You had, what's the name of that dog?
Juniper
got hit by a car and is recovering from a broken leg. And what's this dog's name?
This is Pippi.
So yeah, like you said, you don't want to get outnumbered by the dogs. They can, especially these energetic breeds like that. You kind of had decided, and you'd worked on some farms, and so you had that, you got that practical experience with grazing, and you've always liked working with animals and all that. So you knew, and you kind of knew you had maybe some access to land. It sounds like maybe what brought you to Farm Beginnings was you were realizing, wow, there's some things coming together. I have some experience. I'm ready to move on. Also, I have access to land, which I may not always have access to. I need to maybe go for it a little bit. But you also, and I really respect this, you were like, you didn't just jump straight into it. You thought, well, maybe, though, I need some business background and to kind of look at the business end of it. That, I think, it sounds like the timing of taking Farm Beginnings came right at the time where you were saying, I either need to jump at this or decide to, I'm not going to do something like this.
Yeah, one of the big draws to Farm Beginnings was building some business skill and understanding and just like general financial literacy, which I think is not something that I have had a ton of experience with. And yeah, and that's been a thing, like working at other farms, knowing like I really need to be able to keep the books in order and keep figuring out all the stuff that as a farm worker, I didn't always have access to, but there was this other piece of everything that I needed to learn. So that was a big draw to Farm Beginnings. And then I think one of the things that kind of surprised me and has really helped was like the work around values and kind of dreaming and accessing some of the things that I had been feeling really burnt out, really kind of pessimistic, and being around other people who are excited and being asked to dream and like identify all these things that felt really challenging to me. It was a push and has really helped this year to like have some guidance with myself as I'm doing all of that.
You said when you the first couple of classes you were pretty jaded and pretty crabby and we're a little bit resisting going through the values exercise and kind of maybe judging some of the how idealistic folks were a little bit. Is that a fair assessment?
Maybe just a little bit. Like I definitely was a little bit, yeah, of a curmudgeon, I would say, walking into class being like, oh, I've been doing this for 5 years and everyone wants all these different animals and da 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 da.
But it did. Comes.
Yeah, do you even know about fly strike? And then, of course, I got pretty bad fly strike this year. But
that's karma.
It is. But yeah, I do think it's so good to be around people who are excited. It really helped.
Yeah, and so part of it too was you were a big part of Farm Beginnings in the initial classes is you go through a values exercise. And I think a lot of people actually push against this. They're like, oh, I didn't sign up for this. I don't think it's important. But, and you were a little bit like, you know, let's get on with the learn how to do holistic business management or whatever. But it sounds like that you changed your mind a little bit about that and you found that a little bit useful.
Yeah. I mean, because it is a core part of the holistic financial planning is to be able to have these values to return to like, is this in line with what I'm prioritizing? I do think it also, like a lot of people do the class with other people and I did it alone. And I do think that was part of it for me was like, I was like, everyone's doing couples therapy and I'm trying to figure out all this stuff. And that felt really hard. And like, it has been hard to be solo farming. It's crazy. It's crazy to solo farm. Like, I don't think this is the smartest way to do it at all. But that definitely was like a part of it of just like, it felt so challenging to like, really tune into like, what is the point of being here? What is the point of raising the sheep? What is like, where are all these things connecting? Yeah.
Do you remember, were you surprised at some of the values that kind of you ended up writing down that maybe were in the back of your mind, but you hadn't really thought about them that are really important to you?
I remember they ended up feeling pretty vulnerable. Like one of the ones I remember not even being able in my final thing, it wasn't even fully like fleshed out exactly how to define it, but it was belonging. And that felt really vulnerable to be like thinking about business decisions, but then also like, how am I belonging to land? How am I belonging to community? How am I being held? Like all these different things where I was like, I kept kind of pushing back against myself with that one where I was like, but that's not a business decision. And I kept coming back to, well, of course it is. That's how I'm going to live my life. Like, I'm going to belong to a place and I'm going to belong to people. And like, I think there was a part of my brain that wanted everything to be like very reasonable and like professional or something like that. Yeah, it felt pretty vulnerable to like put those in. And then it also has helped things feel more true to myself. I think when I'm thinking through financial things, I'm like, well, how is that going to impact like how I'm engaging with the world? Is that adding like more financial pressure or stress where I'm going to feel like I have to work my other job so much more? Will I be more burnt out?
Well, and speaking of community impact or reaching out to the community and connecting to the community, you said you also have been grazing on some land, some neighbors' lands up the valley here or in this area, right in this area. And you said you really, one thing, it sounds like you've maybe were a little surprised at how much you enjoyed this, but you really like talking about grazing and how it can improve the land and the animals, and that's something that you really kind of groove on a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt like a really great way to, like when I first moved to this area. It was to take care of my grandma, and it was during COVID, so it was very isolated. And I mostly talked to my family, and I made a couple friends more in my generation, and then that was that. But to connect to more neighbors and more people around here through this thing that I'm really passionate about and that I really love. Yeah, I was saying earlier, I think it especially engages kids really well. Mm-hmm. And that's so fun to, like, when the lambs are a little bigger and they're very cute and kids come out in the pasture, in the paddocks with me, and we talk about what plants they're eating and why they're eating it and why would they choose that and not that, and just, like, exploring the land with people. And it also, I think, yeah, when people see sheep on the side of the road, like, there's not a ton of sheep down here, so they're like, oh, what's going on? And they pause and talk to you and ask what you're doing. And yeah, I'm usually pretty introverted, but I will talk to anyone about sheep.
I think it helps that you can tell stories like, well, so for example, this place didn't have livestock impact, and look at the impact we've had. And I think that can be a sales point for getting access to other people's lands, is, you know, let's help improve that land. And again, I go back to, you maybe your timing's good to get involved with grazing and regenerative grazing, because of there's these innovations out there, and there's been a lot of even just things like developing breeds that do well in grazing, and the fencing and all of that. But the other thing is, now we've kind of, over the past several years, there's a kind of a core of folks out there who have experience, who are can be mentors. And it sounds like maybe you've really benefited from that network of mentors.
Well, I mean, growing up in the city, I didn't have farm experience. I didn't have livestock experience. So it was really so important to me to get a lot of hands-on experience before jumping into things. And I think that's really important for people to do, especially who want to work with livestock, to get experience with birth and death and everything in between, fly strike. but it really gets me. It really does. But I feel really lucky to have some mentors. Can I name drop, like, Hannah Bernhardt? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
And she's well known.
Right, okay. Yeah, having mentors like Hannah Bernhardt, and now even like Janet McNally, I mm-hmm. have been able to ask questions. Yeah. And yeah, but to like have mentor lineage is very cool. Mm-hmm. When I don't have like the knowledge from my family, since I grew up in the city, like I was able to have mentors and have apprenticeship experiences and farm jobs for 5 years before starting my own thing. Having access to mentorship programs felt really helpful last year in my first year of starting out the business and just like being the sole decision maker. So doing the FACT program, Food Animal Concerns Trust mentorship program with Hannah, was just so, so helpful. Like knowing she was getting paid for her time as my mentor, I was able to they do like small grants to get some infrastructure equipment through those. So like once you complete your mentorship, you can write up a project that you do. And I was able to do 2 sessions of that with her. And that was a really huge part of having a successful first year. And then this year I'm moving into a mentorship role with WFAN, the Women Food and Agriculture Network, where I'm going to be paid to be a mentor and someone else will be paid to be a mentee. Mm-hmm. So for us to both have that money that's like not adding pressure to the farm, it's a nonprofit offering that money. And then they also are offering like kind of the HR support of it. Like if there's an issue, there's someone through that organization that we'll talk to and be able to mediate if need be.
Yeah.
And I think providing those structures, the money and the like the human resources support structures, is really, really helpful, and yeah, would love to see more of that.
You put these sheep on this farm literally April 20th of 2025, and we're looking at April 16th of 2026, so literally almost a year. And so it's, you're still just trying to get your feet from under you. But I guess in that year's time, what were some of the biggest surprises, both, I guess, positive and negative, as you, because this was the first time you, like you said, you were responsible for everything. You weren't just an employee on another place or whatever.
Man, I don't know that anything was like totally surprising, but I knew going into things, I probably likely did not have enough savings. And that just kept being true. it didn't change. And like, usually when I would realize, it would feel surprising. Like I would have some like money shocks where I'd be like, oh no, not again. Mm-hmm. And then I'd kind of be surprised at my surprise and, like, you know, yeah, yeah. So like being able to build up infrastructure or like equipment, not even infrastructure right now, but just the basic equipment, that kept surprising me. I was surprised by an incredibly easy lambing season last year. Mm-hmm. It felt, I don't even know, it felt like protected and or something. Like, it felt like something out of my control, which usually lambing season is anyways. But yeah. It was pretty magical to have a peaceful, easy lambing season. Unpleasant surprise was fly strike, grazing in a spot that didn't let sheep's wool dry off. Mm-hmm. In a low spot in the valley. And it was like kind of that landscape shift from like, I'm more used to grazing up higher in western Wisconsin or even like up in Henderson, that's up on a hill. Mm-hmm. And I went to this low spot that was shady. It was like the river kept rising. The landowners would call me and be like, okay, if it gets to like 24, 25, like then you'll have 24 hours to move them. So that was not my favorite grazing spot. Mm-hmm. I definitely hit that at the wrong time, which... Yeah. It was my first time grazing that, so I couldn't have known. But that was kind of, like, every day was a little like, oh, man, is something bad going to happen?
It sounds like maybe a pleasant surprise. Maybe, I don't know how surprised you were at this, but you were able to sell out your lambs because you direct market them, and that there was a demand for well-raised lamb out there.
You know, I was, like, nervous about how I was pricing things. It's on the more expensive side, but also felt pretty strongly, like, with the amount of work going into it, this is what I need to do. And if this is a big part of my income, this is what I need to do. And yeah, it was, got a lot of support with that. Like, people really wanted the lamb, and yeah, I was able to sell out, and that was just so awesome to have that. Sometimes I get a little like, oh, marketing, whatever. Like, I don't like doing that part, yeah. But I actually really do like the customer connection part of all of this, like getting pictures throughout the year of what people have cooked, especially for like their holidays, and getting to be a part of people's lives like that. It just, it's really joyful. Like, I think that's a really joyful part of this work, is the feeding people. And I'm so excited to get more lamb to more people this year.
Yeah. So what are your kind of future plans? I know you're still just trying to keep your head above water, and we're a couple weeks out from lambing season for this year. So you're going to be really busy, but yeah. Have you thought about, when you do have a little bit of downtime, kind of what your future plans? It sounds like maybe contract grazing might be part of that a little bit.
Yeah. I'm really interested in doing more contract grazing. It feels like the feasible way to have a livestock business, I guess, at this point, especially with the scale I'm working at and the land access that I have. Like, I would like to grow the flock ultimately. And I think contract grazing to access more land and get paid for that work is really kind of the way forward. I'm trying to stay pretty mobile because I don't know the future of my land access at the family farm. So I'm trying to like make sure that things that I'm doing are able to move if they need to move, until I have a little more security.
Any advice to anybody who's, I know you have not attained every goal out there, but at this point you've seen enough of it and you are in the reality of it now, but any advice to somebody who's just thinking, boy, I want to look into something like this, or, you know, it might not even be specifically grazing, but just farming in general?
I think seeking out mentors is really key. And I think especially for livestock work, like, this is a big thing I thought about in Farm Beginnings, was like, so great to be learning these business skills that I haven't built, and more financial literacy, more farm planning. But especially for people who want to work with livestock, like getting experience with the birth process, with death, like, what is it like to kill an animal? What's it like to put one down in crisis or slaughter for meat? And like, knowing how you respond to the smells and the feels and the, like, all of it, I think is really, really important before committing to it, because it is such a huge commitment to tend animals. And it's such a beautiful thing. It's such a life-giving thing in all the different ways, because you're nourishing other people, because you're nourishing land, because you're nourishing the animals and yourselves. But I do think seeking out mentorship and experience to be in it a little bit before you really get going is really important.
I gotta say, it's really neat to see you obviously very much care for this land, and you're very much aware of the bigger issues of, we've got the Minnesota River, which literally is maybe 100 yards from here, if that. We could see it if there wasn't trees in the way. And that flows through some of the most intensely farmed country, or most intensely farmed land in the country, and it's showing the results of it. We're seeing, you know, erosion and chemical pollution, that kind of thing. I know you talked about this. You had felt almost helpless about what to do about something like this, but I've seen this a lot with beginning farmers who come at it from a maybe ecological perspective a little bit, and maybe even a social justice perspective. It's like, well, I've got access to this land. I don't know what the future is. Don't know how long I am going to have access to land. But while I can, there's these certain skills I'm going to learn, and I'm going to take advantage. This is a way for me not just to feel bad about it, the situation, but to kind of take some action. It must be kind of neat, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I do think like one of the things learning more deeply about settler colonialism in college that really stuck with me is like the idea of progress and permanence, and or those are two separate ideas. So I guess the ideas of progress and permanence, but like, I think there's something about like, this land will not be in my family forever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be. And I'm here for some amount of time, and I would like to leave it better if I can. I would like to clean it up. I would like to build relationships that can move towards land back, whether it's this land or different land in the area. But I think the Minnesota River Valley is really like a crucial point of that conversation. And I think, yeah, I feel really strongly about like rebuilding relationship with the River Valley and kind of disrupting some of the ideas around like permanence, like monuments and what will be here forever.
For more information on the Farm Beginnings course and Riverbed Lamb, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 401 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. We'd like to note that this episode, just like all Ear to the Ground podcasts, is the product of work done by real humans. Generative artificial intelligence, also known as generative AI, plays no part in the recording or editing of these shows. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.